Hi, I'm Lisa McEwen.
And I'm Lisa Anita Wagner. And together, we are...
She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark! For little time. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to She's Gotta Have It! Exclamation mark. I love, by the way, how I always start saying it, and then you're like, gotta have it!
Like I'm your sous chef, I will back up the name.
Amazing. Today we are talking about Season 1, Episode 6 of Californication, entitled Absinthe Makes the Heart Grow Fonder, which was directed by Ken Whittingham and was written by Eric Weinberg and Tom Kapinos. But before we get into that, why don't we do an update?
Yes.
Yeah. So how have things been going for you?
I've had a bit of a hard time with symptoms of EDS again, and I had a big flare-up of nausea. I did, however, perform on Friday. It was a very short 5-minute performance. I had a lot of help and assistance, and a friend came up there with me, and I managed to do it. I had mentioned upstairs how I'd read that Lady Gaga does that often, but it's like the adrenaline kicks in, and the performance still went well. So that was just sort of a happy note on that front, but I have been in a real sort of housebound, nauseous state. And this podcast evening and the meal that we share before is such a lovely respite from that. And I actually eat here with other Lisa more than I eat in other places because it's so relaxing.
Because of my magical relaxing and cooking powers.
Yes. I guess I wanted to just, yeah, touch on the interesting place you can find yourself with a chronic illness, where I feel like I've still had many successes, but also been really kind of held down by it and had to cancel a lot of social stuff.
Yeah, that's frustrating. I am continuing to ease into a kind of better place work-wise. I think it took me like a full... maybe 2 weeks after I got back from New York, maybe even a bit longer, to really kind of come down from all the stress of this semester, because I think, I don't know if I've talked about this, I think the listeners know that I have sciatica. I also have an anxiety disorder. And so just balancing mental health and physical limitations with like trying to do a lot of work at once was just a lot this semester. And I was really kind of wound up from that. And I was starting to feel much better. I felt it lift on Wednesday. And those of you who are Facebook friends of mine will know that on Friday, I had one of the most spectacular wipeouts I have had maybe ever in my life. I was on my way to a dinner party. I had wine and fancy candles. I had like $80 worth of wine and fancy candles.
Ooh.
Yeah, I just bought them from Indigo from their Black Friday sale, so they were less overpriced than usual, so I felt very good about myself. And I was walking, and it hadn't snowed yet. It started snowing on Saturday and Sunday. And I hit some uneven pavement, and I went flying through the air towards the ground and just sort of douche, like wiped out. And I hit... my sort of diaphragm rib area and scraped my knee, and all of the candles and wine smashed, and I found myself sort of lying in a puddle of very nice wine.
But you protected your head.
I protected my head and I protected my lower back. My osteopath was very proud of me, so I just felt very good about that. It could have been worse. And in fact, the assessment I got from him yesterday was that probably I've just done some muscle damage, which is sore, but it could be so much worse. I don't think I broke anything, which is very good news, because this will suck for a while, but not like hopefully months. So anyway, that's where I've been for the past few days. I've been doing a lot of lying down and staying inside, which sort of was a nice thing to be able to do in a way, given how stormy it got. Like, it was actually nice to just have an excuse to stay inside and do nothing, because I think I kind of need that also. And today I was feeling a bit better than I felt in a few days, and I was like semi-productive. Like, I've actually been getting through some life admin stuff, and I'm starting the papers section of my Marie Kondoing, everyone. I finally started. I'm very excited. Oh my god. So I did a bit of that today. I walked on the treadmill today, but also today I'm so proud of myself. I actually this is while you were texting me, actually. I was lying down reading a book that I want to read just for me.
Lovely.
And it is a book that I'm just going to recommend to people.
Yeah, I was
because
ask
it's actually on
it?
Theme for this show, but I just want to look up the author. It's called Becoming Beauvoir, and it is a biography of Simone de Beauvoir, who is a famous French feminist from the 20th century, and it's written by Kate Kirkpatrick. So I got like through a chapter and a half in like an hour. I'm a slow reader, also the introduction was long. And I'm so excited to read this book because I've never actually sat down and read a bio of Simone de Beauvoir, and this one I think is the one that I want to read. Because she was partnered with another philosopher who was, I think, in a lot of ways more famous than her, frustratingly, Jean-Paul Sartre. And she's often kind of seen, this is what's on theme for this podcast, she's often seen as kind of like a disciple of his, or kind of a little bit derivative of Sartre. So she isn't really recognized as a philosopher and a thinker in her own right. And Kate Kirkpatrick's thesis seems to be that they were equal partners and they both influenced each other's work, and she's trying to bring that and foreground that more because she's trying to correct for this sort of sexist history in which Simone de Beauvoir gets really downplayed. And I'm really excited to read it because, yeah, I just find her philosophy really interesting. I've talked about her a little bit on this show. She's talked about that bifurcation in women's consciousness where we experience ourselves as subjects but also experience ourselves as objects at the same time. I often use her in my intro to philosophy classes because she's also an excellent writer, and I wrote The Second Sex, which is where that idea comes from. Yeah, and I just, the idea of like lying down and reading a book that I just want to read just for me, just is I think that's the first time I've been able to do that in like 3 months. It felt great. So
wow. Yeah,
so that's my update.
That's our updates.
Yeah.
Now, shall we get into what we want?
Yes, we should.
Wow.
Wow. We don't even need the sound effect. We can just have us. We should just record ourselves going, wow.
Because that'll be way better.
I'm sure the listeners love to hear us do that all the time. Do you want to?
I can start because mine is actually very simple today. I just want to be not nauseous. It's incredible, actually. It's just been a little bit interesting. I had felt before that nausea would take up like my bandwidth, and I actually had it take up my ability to hear and my vision. Everything kind of went white almost. So it's really wonderful, but I'm looking forward to it coming down again. I do know that this is medications lining up, but it was, yeah. So I would like to just be not nauseous. I'm still looking forward to, I actually feel pretty good right now, but to have it really go all the way down. So mine is unusual and short and very specific, but that's, yeah.
I also want for you to not be not nauseous. Sorry that you're dealing with that. What do I want? Okay, this is one of those where I haven't actually got anything coming in. So, listeners, you're listening to me come up with this in the moment. What is it that I want? I want Christmas decorations. I've already started kind of putting a few up in my apartment, but I got this long string of multicolored lights, and I think I'm going to put it around, line it around the top of my kitchen counter, and just so I can have it, and it will be atmospheric. I am such a Christmas nerd. I love Christmas so much. I love the atmosphere of it. I love the food. I love the tastes. I love the smells. I love the movies, mostly. I just love the whole vibe of the season. I think there's something really lovely about everyone suddenly having like a reason to drink nice things and like get together and see each other and like do cozy things. Like, and I wish it lasted longer.
Well, yeah. I just learned that about you, I think, recently, and I'm so pleased because I also love Christmas. And from what you're want, I got a tinge of like, oh yes. And I also am very excited to set up my Christmas decorations, which I will still do soon.
Yay.
When the nausea breaks.
Yeah. And maybe next time I will roast some chestnuts for us, because I'm actually getting really good at roasting chestnuts.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Whoa.
I might link to that recipe that I really love in the show notes, because...
Sure.
Yeah. I found a recipe for roasting chestnuts where you actually boil them briefly. And then you put them in the oven, and then they peel right off, and they're delicious. So, and they don't dry out in the same way that just roasting them tends to dry them out, in my experience.
I've only had them a few times, like from like a nut stand, and they're just so good. They don't even make sense. They taste like a baked good. Essentially,
yes.
In
yes.
A nut. They're like a
and whole as baked somebody good. Who doesn't eat sugar anymore. And so I don't eat cookies or, I mean, I never really like was super addicted to cookies and cakes, but it is one of the closest things to just like chomping down in a like delicious cookie that I've like, that I can get to in my life these days. So yeah, that's what I want.
What we want. Mine got better after yours.
Oh, good. Oh, the nausea's lifted a bit. Okay. Christmas.
Got me excited about Christmas.
Christmas helps lots of things.
You know, I think I also like Christmas. I don't think I ever told people because I think it was like, on the whole, my other friends are not super Christmassy people. Annabelle is. Like, not that it's not, but I haven't. I'm very pleased to know that. And now I'm going to be even more like pro-Christmas.
Yeah. One of the darkest times in my life was when I first moved to New York and I had a nervous breakdown. And the worst part of it came right before the Christmas season. And I think that's part of what helped me through it was during the darkest moment. It was like November or something. But then New York dresses up for Christmas. Like I was visiting there at the beginning of November and it was just starting to dress up for Christmas as I was leaving. And I was a bit sad because it's so beautiful at Christmas time. It's such a glorious time to be in New York City. Because you feel like you're in a movie. I think just being in New York City around Christmas time and just like constantly drinking like eggnog lattes and being around Christmas music and just watching Christmas movies really helped to guard against me falling into an abyss. So I loved Christmas before that, but ever since then, it's like been a kind of real, has a real special place in my heart. Yeah.
Go Christmas, that it helped you.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now let's talk about Hank Moody.
Let's do it. Hank spends the night with a sexy surfer girl, and in return, she robs him. Mia wants more of Hank's writing to pass her class. Instead, he offers to help her with her own writing. That's a lot of what happens. Yeah. There's some more stuff in there, too.
Yeah.
It's a fast-paced episode. Like, there's a lot that happens.
Yeah, because I was thinking they didn't mention at all that Hank slept over and kind of kissed Karen. Like, that's a really big plot point.
Yes.
In my books as well.
And also the whole Runkle situation with Marcy and them trying to, I mean,
Runkle's attack. Marcy trying, yeah.
All right, well, let's start at the beginning. So what, do you have any initial thoughts?
I guess my initial thought is that I know they were both drinking, but in that moment that I just first mentioned, that when Hank stayed for a drink, that they did end up actually making out and Karen put her arms around him and like held it for a while. Mm-hmm. So I didn't remember that at all. And I think that was the first thing that just sort of stuck out to me about that episode, that yeah, that Karen essentially like made out back, because I knew he was always doing that kind of thing.
So right. So for those who haven't seen the episode, Hank, let's backtrack a bit.
Sure.
Hank's on a night out. He gets a call. He has to leave. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then he comes back and hangs out with Karen. And they have a bit of a heart-to-heart, I think. And what's interesting is that right before that, Karen says the thing that I'd been saying a few episodes ago, which is that Hank loves Karen, but he's kind of a little bit romanticizing it. And he's in love with the idea of loving her.
Yeah.
And she's worried that he can't accept the banal everydayness of actually having a family. And she says that to him. She's like, you don't love me, Hank. You're in love with the idea of love. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I agree. Also in that evening, they had just seen Becca do her kind of first rock show. So I think they were connecting on their really excellent child procreation abilities.
Yes.
Because they do really connect on Becca, and even just them in the audience of that Battle of the Bands.
Yeah.
It was a high school thing, but it was seemed quite large.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was really interesting to see them really, really connect in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, I know, I'm trying to figure out how to talk about it because it is all over the place. What's the best plan?
I mean, should we start at the beginning with the wandering around the supermarket?
With his shirt open down to his navel.
I love it.
Smoking a cigarette in the supermarket.
Yeah.
With his sunglasses on.
Which you probably could still legally do in LA back then. Because I don't know when LA banned smoking. And what did she say to him? That stuff will kill you. And it's unclear to me whether she's talking about the alcohol or the cigarettes or both.
I assumed cigarettes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But I was trying to remember the moment because she actually just saw him kind of stumbling from the back and then says, do you know anything about wine? So that was interesting too. It seemed like without even seeing him from the front, this like hunched over guy was of interest to her that yeah. she kind of called him over.
Yeah. He still has a bit of a swagger even when he's drunk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they go home and they listen to records together. He wakes up and she's made off with his vinyl and his guitar.
And then it sounded like also a t-shirt that Karen had given him. They talked yeah. about that later.
Which is interesting to me just in relation to the rest of the episode, because she does, so she does come, I will say, she does come back later in the season, briefly, but in this episode, she is very much a kind of like, she's like a fantasy porn girl. Like, it's a really kind of like out of life, everyday life experience. And which is interesting because I think compared to the rest of the episode where Hank is spending time with his family, Hank actually manages to connect with Karen, and Hank also stays over and wakes up and has this bizarro breakfast of like another life in which he's Bill. And it's sort of, it's sandwiched by this fantasy girl who's sort of this nameless, hot, sexy surfer girl who refuses to tell him her name and who just wants to kind of have sex with him. I don't know what to make of that. Do you have any ideas?
I guess the only thing is that I could sort of figure out is, I think at first it did seem, it was a bit of a like red herring with her not saying her name. It did seem like a porny thing. And then the only thing, it seemed like that maybe she was doing that because she was planning on robbing him. So she didn't want to give any
sure.
name.
Yeah.
So I guess that's just sort of what came to mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess I'm interested, like I just said, in that she sort of took to him immediately. But I just answered my own question. She was already planning on robbing, probably. So that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Why she was like, oh, a drunk stumbling guy. Hey, oh my God, that totally makes sense. So that's what I think that's about. So it was like his vulnerability in that situation. And then he was so very Hank that she friggin' changed her mind and came back.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah. That was a very interesting choice that she got away with all the stuff.
Yeah.
And she chose to come back because she wanted the experience of Hank again.
Yeah. And I think for us, from the audience's perspective, it also shows us that, like, because it is sandwiching this stuff, so we don't get this perspective at the beginning because it seems like, oh, womp womp. This is just another, like, Hank moment where some hot chick
throws herself at him,
and it's one of the pornier, I've talked about this, the pornier aspects of this series.
And for the listeners, she doesn't even ever have a shirt on. She's only ever in a bikini top that's
yeah.
a rainbow
oh, yeah.
and very short shorts. And isn't she even on roller skates?
Yeah.
Like, it's so...
She doesn't even have shoes. Yeah.
yeah
so she's,
it's so porny. You couldn't be more porny.
Yeah. And then that's followed by an episode where Hank actually kind of gets in touch because Bill's on vacation. He goes to Becca's concert with Karen. He actually has a moment with Mia that we'll get to in a bit. And then he's back with Karen at the end. And they connect. And he stays over in this kind of, like, he's kind of so close to the things that he wants that he can taste it, but it's not really real. And then at the end, we're back with the surfer girl. And with the narration over that last scene of Mia's story that she's given him to read. And it's kind of schlocky, but it's also really capturing the truth of what's going on emotionally for him, which is she's narrating him. She's narrating how she sees him. And it's sort of like a bit of a parody of that kind of like, oh, I'm like a tortured artist in the 20th century who drinks a lot and smokes a lot, and I write about like drinking a lot and smoking a lot. And so she's describing a man who is like Hank, who drinks a lot and smokes a lot and who has like kind of existential angst. And then she ends up kind of saying the painful part of that is that she agreed with him. And I'm paraphrasing at this point. Like, because people find it so difficult to find meaning in their lives, they just kind of, like, stumble their ways through it. And this is happening while Hank is making out with this woman. And so suddenly it's cast in this really sad light for me, where it's like, yeah, Hank is making out with this woman because he can't be with Karen right now.
Mm.
Like, this isn't really what he wants. It's not actually really that sexy the second time around, even though it's much sweeter because yeah, you're right, she comes back and she's apologetic and she gives him his stuff back,
and then he doesn't want her to know her name, which
yeah.
just seemed like a
yeah
another
horny twist.
Was of interest, as you mentioned, so Bill was away, and then Karen had pushed him into the pool, so his clothes were wet.
She didn't push him in, did she?
I don't. They were just playing around, but yeah. Anyway, he ended up in the pool, which is why he
so
ended
they,
up.
So let's so go. The, so sure. they have a kind of talk about how he's like still in love with her, and she says, "You're not in love with me. You're in love with the idea of love." And then they stand up, and he says, "How can you be so beautiful and so wrong?" And she's, I mean, kind of like what you've pointed this out. She kind of doesn't like uninvited. You know, yeah. She really likes that attention because I think she's now finally getting what she wasn't getting for so long in their relationship. And so...
And I can't imagine Bill is very good at, like, even listening to her.
God. Bill does not have game or swagger or sex appeal at all. Poor Bill. And so they kiss, and then Hank steps back and she says, look, you're doing it, you're running for the hills. Because he has a sort of ambivalent look on his face, which could be about anything, right?
Yeah.
But so she's maybe projecting a bit at that point. And then he kind of, and then he's like, no. And then she's like, she pushes him away because she's sort of like, don't kiss me again. But then I don't think she realized that the pool was right behind him. Like, I don't think she meant to push him in.
I didn't think it was a deliberate, like, aggressive push. Oh, but it was, yeah, like a playful kind of thing.
Okay, yeah. It might have been.
And I thought, even honestly, when people are in that place when they're trying to not make out, pushing into the pool because then all of a sudden you're both wet. Like, I wasn't sure. It seemed like a playful, sexy kind of thing,
yeah,
possibly.
Yeah.
But in any case, it did end up with Hank's clothes wet.
Yeah.
And that's why he was in Bill's like pink polo shirt and rolled up khaki pants. But it looked so ridiculous on him.
And then so we see suddenly an image of, like, I guess a dream he's having in the night where Karen comes in that white angelic nightgowny business.
Which is very close to what she was wearing, but it was different.
Yeah, yeah.
So that it was clear it was a dream.
It was a bit more like kind of, I don't know, like not exactly Madonna-ing because she still comes in and starts to have sex with him. But that kind of reverence he has for her, like I think... Because I think I said to you when she came in, like, it's really interesting that she's wearing all white and she just looks very angelic. And it sort of, it calls back to the episode where they were at the fundraiser and you were talking about how angelic she looks. Like, they really play that up in this series a lot.
And the modesty of the stuff adds to that, too. Like, it's still definitely sexy and flowy, but she's literally covered to almost her wrists and right up to her neck.
Yeah.
In white.
And then he wakes up out of his dream, as he often does, and it's like a... Often this series contrasts Hank's, like, fantasies or dreams or desires with the reality he's faced with and juxtapose that really interestingly. So he wakes up to Mia, who's wearing a white T-shirt, who's kind of got scraggly hair, and who's kissing him, like, non-consensually.
And straddling him. So he's literally pinned.
Yeah.
I'd actually forgotten that he was dreaming of kissing Karen. Mm-hmm. And then when he actually came to, it was Mia.
Because there's been this a few times. Like, he's had a few priest/nun dreams where something starts to happen in the dream and he wakes up and something else is happening. Something similar, but else. Yeah.
And Mia, yeah, she is ballsy. Like, to go into that room and just straddle him.
Yeah.
And then when Karen is calling, she doesn't move. She just sits there.
Yeah. Like, she's really...
Pushing everything.
Yeah, and she's trying to push his buttons. Like, she really, like, is trying to get his attention in this episode, which is interesting.
Yeah, back to that other parked thing about her calling Hank.
Yeah. So she's at her teacher's house, the gross teacher we saw in one of the previous episodes, and they're, like, doing cocaine and drinking, and she calls.
She calls Hank and says... that she's, like, in an emergency and makes it sound more like she's really stuck and that he's... Because she even says, get off of me. But you see her in the bathroom on the phone, so you know that that's not what's really going on. But she cries wolf, essentially. It's still a creepy situation, but Hank made a call and said you weren't unsafe. Like, you could have just, like, left.
Yeah. But he doesn't know that until he gets there, and he has to leave his beautiful, idyllic... family situation with Becca and Karen, where they're walking with ice cream after Becca's concert, and everyone's happy, and and suddenly Mia calls him and says, come, you have to help me, he's preying on me, I'm in trouble.
Do you think she knew where they were going?
It's Unclear to me. She probably did. I bet she did. Yeah.
I feel like... deliberate. Because she gets jealous of Karen and jealous of Becca.
Yeah.
For Hank. I didn't think it was that... You know, it's interesting. I always think it's less deliberate with Mia, but she's actually very, very deliberate. Like, it wasn't until our conversation that I realized last week that she changed into a bikini when Becca's guitar player was there.
Yeah.
So it seems very deliberate, but also pretty clear that she's trying to get, like, that... her, like, Bill to pay attention to her. So it's all the father figures.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I feel like she was jealous because Hank was with Karen and
Becca,
and there would be nothing that would really get his attention at that point except something that extreme.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if it was very deliberate, and she, took herself to her teacher's house.
Yeah, and Hank's fury at her afterwards for dragging him away from what was a perfect little scene and being able to connect with Karen. Yeah, just the way she keeps trying to. And at the beginning of the episode, when she was coming in for some of his work after the surfer girl had robbed him, I think he said something like, "Oh, fuck me." And she was like, "Okay." And she like went over to kiss him. Like, she's really...
And she grabs his bum. She's very comfortable and provocative with him.
Yeah.
It's interesting. She's like that with Hank, and Hank's like that with Karen. Like, remember how he just goes in for the kiss all the time? And he mentioned that in this episode, because I had really noticed that when she's like a magnet for him. Like, he can't keep his, like, face off of Karen if he's close enough.
And when he keeps getting angry at her and pushing her away, like, I don't know who the actress is who plays Mia. I'm just going to look her up. She's really good. Like, her face really falls in a really authentic way whenever he pushes her away.
Oh, she is really good. She's a perfect Mia. And I find the character so interesting, how she does, like, come out of nowhere. There's something that's, like, really...
Madeline Zima.
Oh, lots of Madeline.
Zima? I'm probably saying that wrong. If somebody knows how to say it, please tell me.
Oh, she plays this very complex role very, very well. Because you totally believe she's a teen when she's, like, you know, when she's sort of dressed down and dressed up. She looks like she's, like, 25. And she's got the confidence of a... 30-year-old lady.
Yeah.
In moments. And then her face falls moments. Like she's a child. Yeah, exactly. Moments.
It's so interesting. It's such a contrast.
Yeah. Yeah, but she does look really hurt. Like that example you gave when last time Hank called her kid.
Yeah.
And then this time there was another thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Where she goes to kiss him and he's like, "Stop it." And he pushes her away and she sort of smiles, smirks at him, but then her face really falls.
Yeah.
And then when he's telling her to get out of the car after he's brought her back from her teacher's, he's like, "Get out." She's like, she's still trying to get something from him and attention from him. And it's so heartbreaking.
It is.
Because then she talks about wanting her father to be happy. And you can also tell that that's sincere.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a complicated position to be in, to like be frustrated with your parent for sucking as a parent, but you still want them to be happy.
Yeah, she said Bill never asked her once to help with her homework.
Oh, my God.
And yeah, Bill... That's her biological father. That's, yes. Right? Yeah.
It's like, pull your fucking socks up, Bill. Jesus.
Yeah.
And so that's the other thing that the series is contrasting, right? Is like that Hank is actually really great father in a lot of ways. He's not perfect. He definitely like falls down sometimes on a lot of things. But like he's there and he's involved in a way that Bill is like not.
Yeah.
Bill might do certain things right. He checks the sort of good on paper boxes, but which Hank doesn't. But yeah, Hank is...
Yeah, the better choice.
More tuned in. Yeah.
More tuned in. The better choice in some aspects. But yeah, much more in the moment and in the relationship when he's there. Yeah, compared to other episodes, this is a lot of happening.
Yeah. And then, at the end of the episode, he comes down in ridiculous, like, pink polo shirt and rolled up khakis. And he is, it's like this weird juxtapositioning again, right? Where Hank is literally inside Bill's life, inside his clothes, inside his kitchen. He's sitting at his breakfast table with his family around him, where there's like Mia and Becca and Karen and like there's Hank. And it looks so bizarre. Like it just looks so unsettling and hilarious at the same time.
And also, Bill's clothes are too big for him, so it's like the weird look on him. And then, it's a genius moment though, because also, like I said, like because he's sleeping with Mia, wants to sleep with Karen, and just wants his daughter's love so much. Like it's like the three women of his life.
Yeah,
one of which he didn't really choose to be at that same closeness. It's tight writing.
Yeah, it is. I'm actually appreciating the series more than when I've watched it in the past. Because when we were coming down, I was like, oh, this episode is sort of solo all over the place. I'm not sure what I'm going to have to say about it. But then I do. I do have thoughts.
Yeah. And then we still haven't touched on just the Runkle situation.
Oh, yeah. What did you... I wanted to hear more about what you thought of that because you love them so much as
yeah.
a couple.
Well, I guess it was also heartbreaking when Marcy comes, like, dressed up in her, like, sexy dress.
Yeah.
And caught, I would say, Danny and Runkle in another
unfortunate
S&M situation that they're doing. And not unfortunate, the S&M, but unfortunate for the cheating aspect.
Mm-hmm.
I really just like feel for her the most, because I still don't think, since the show started, it seems like Runkle still hasn't had sex with her, or they had the fast sex in the office today.
Mm-hmm.
But it just, yeah, it seems very much like she's this open wound of hurt. And mm-hmm. he is a very bad liar around it. But they, when she came into the office, they did have sex today, yeah. but it looked, he's Runkle, so I feel like it might always be kind of quick, but it felt like it was even quick for her because she was like, okay. And then she like yeah. tapped his head and said she was going to go shopping.
Like, take your time. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That looks like that's a thing that happens frequently from the look on her face, but maybe a little faster than usual today. And it's because he'd been halfway into the scene with Danny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they like dive in awkwardly and ill-advisedly into like the S&M in the worst way. But it's just so Charlie and Marcy because, yeah, she's like, well, let's just start doing stuff to me and we'll see how it goes. It's like, no, no one should ever do S&M like that. And then he says, maybe we should have a safe word. And your response is, yeah. How about don't pee on me? That's
yeah.
That's our safe word.
Like, yeah, and also just looking at that now, like, it was the worst way to set up a S&M kind of thing. And it was pretty clear from her face as he's describing stuff that he wants to do with Danny, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Her face was like, I don't know.
Yeah.
So he's like not reading the room and he's like dives yes. right into smacking her super hard.
Yeah.
But she's Marcy and she loves him and she's kind of game.
Yeah.
So that's just, their dynamic is really interesting. And
I don't want to.
Yeah, no.
You. Okay.
I was pretty much done.
The one thing I did want to say is that, again, there's Madonnas and whores in this series. And they're presented, I should say, like, in more complex ways. But those are kind of, like, two dominating tropes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's definitely women who fall outside of that. But Marcy is definitely, like, his wife. And she's the reality. And she knows him and she calls him on his bullshit. And there's nothing kind of, like, idealized mm-hmm. in her eyes about Charlie. Whereas, like, Danny is his assistant. Like, there's more of the power dynamic going on. And there's just the fantastic way they got into that in the sense that it kind of really started as a fantasy and with a kind of sexual charge to it, whereas Marcy's looking at him like, eh. And there's nothing sexy about her face
yeah.
in that moment. And you're right, he's not reading the room, but it's also like the way that Danny sees him right now and the way that Marcy sees him right now are very different. Historically, it's been how are men seeing women, but a lot of this series is about how are women seeing men? Like, what do they mean? Like, what Hank means to Mia and what Hank means to Becca and what Hank means to Karen are all like very different things
mm-hmm.
that we saw in that episode where suddenly people are coming and going like a Shakespearean comedy and we're seeing all sorts of different aspects of Hank. Suddenly, like, there's the way Danny's dynamic happens with Charlie and the way that Marcy's dynamic happens, and they are extremely opposed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to turn that kind of everydayness into a fantasy, right? Like, it's really hard to kind of take somebody you've known for a really long time who can see right through you and who doesn't have like any illusions about you, and then suddenly like become some fantasy dom in their sex.
Yeah, especially that when it's
world.
Not. Yeah. See, I guess in a little bit, I guess I'm thinking of future episodes down the road. I guess when the Runkles are really tight, I feel like they actually kind of get to what you're talking about. Cause mm-hmm. there's some, remember they'd have their like
yeah.
dates and stuff. So I feel like my idealized version of them from watching it years ago was that they were more like that all the time. I guess it surprised me at the lower status that Marcy had in these early episodes.
Yeah.
And she's really like sort of heartbroken and open, makes her very likable. It's probably
yes.
actually in retrospect, you mentioned that before, that I have, even though I can't exactly remember where it goes, I have a sense, and I do remember them really connecting much better later on.
Yeah, they do eventually, yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's a bit sad. And even the way that Marcy came in, like, she was wearing, like, a sort of sexy dress, but it somehow seemed sadder because she was trying so hard. Yeah. I don't know, it was very...
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to, like, give her a hug and, like, make her a cocoa kind of thing, yeah, the whole time.
Yeah.
And it does seem so unfair that she can't get any sex out of it, too. Yeah. Like, the whole thing.
Yeah. And that she's trying so hard in good faith and Charlie's lying.
Yeah.
Through his teeth to her. Yeah.
And then also she just seems kind of cool and in a lot of ways too good for Runkle already. Yes. So you're like,
oh, yes.
Just, yeah. Yeah, kind of like Hank's impulse. Like, just get your life together. Talk to your wife.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's all I have to say about that episode, which was a lot. We talked a lot.
Even the more chaotic episodes are really tight still when you really break them apart.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Whoa. Nice.
Building appreciation even more for this.
Go series. Tom Kapinos.
Yeah.
And everybody else.
And David Duchovny.
Yeah. The whole team, not one man, but yeah. Excellent. Well,
Natasha McElhone for doing a bang up job of playing a manic pixie dream lady.
Yeah. With such big eyes.
Such big eyes. Oh my God.
Well, you kind of got that too. The really big eyes.
Yes. Like, she makes me feel better because sometimes I look at myself in photos and I'm like, I have bug eyes. Like, they look to me like kind of too bulgy and kind of alien. But then I look, see them on her and I'm like, no, they're beautiful on her. So, okay, maybe that's how other people see it.
Yeah. No, it is. Like, large eyes, I feel like, are universally somehow in our DNA appealing. Like, it looks, I guess it looks like more babies have really big eyes and animal. That sounds awful, but you know what I mean?
It is. That's part of it.
Yeah.
And you know what? So as some of the listeners may realize, I've talked about this before. I met many of my biological relatives this summer. And one of my, I definitely get these eyes from Gail's side, my biological mother. And I met my cousin Annette, who also has like these enormous eyes. And I was like, you have the eyes too. Like,
my people.
Not that our eyes are exactly the same, but just that like, oh my God. Like, yeah. Because I was like, where did I get these eyes from? And my biological aunt, who passed away over a decade ago, had these eyes. And my biological grandfather, Stanley, on Gail's side, had these eyes. So... yeah, that's where I get them from.
Interesting. I feel like it's some kind of survival of the fittest kind of thing, like the big-eyed ones get ahead.
Yeah.
But yeah, on Karen, it really is remarkable, especially when she's looking down.
Yes.
You can see all the white around her eyes.
Yes.
Which on some faces almost can look like a surprise mark.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
On her, it's kind of like, swing, here's my beauty.
Swing.
Yeah. I'm going to look at you now. It's like a privilege to have her look at you because her eyes are big.
Yeah, exactly. Well, on that note...
Now that
we've said it, we gotta get it.
Woo! I started that time.